If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all the previous centuries of its existence. Nikola Tesla.
Welcome to the Frequency Shifter Show. I'm your host, Corinne Summers, founder of Artisan Pharmacy. In this show, we explore ways to raise the frequency of ourselves, one another, and our planet. We're digging deep into all things metaphysical, from what is frequency, to the power of sound, the Schumann resonance, our DNA, Reiki, the energy of water, and beyond. All to shift our minds and bodies back into alignment with richer states of connection, elevated awareness, and maximum human potential. And we're bringing on the global experts and thought leaders to share their wisdom as they let us pick their brains around all these juicy, mysterious topics.
First of all, I don't know who Ricky is and metaphysical. Schumann's Renaissance? I don't even know. What are you talking about? Wait a minute. I need us to take a step back and calm down. What are we even talking about here?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention, I have a co-host. The universe insisted. What can I say? This is Alex Terranova, founder of Dream Mason. He's sort of a newbie to some of this frequency stuff, and he's going to help keep everything balanced, grounded, and relatable.
So this show isn't just for the experts to nerd out on all things metaphysical, but it's an open welcome space for everyone to explore the mysteries of the universe and raise our frequencies together.
I'm so excited for our guest, Rhian Lockhart, today because she's been hearing the dead and knowing way more than she should since she was a young child. She dives into some of these backstories and talks all about how today she's a psychic medium and the head witch at Moonstone Witchery. She's also an interdenominational ordained minister, which I think is really cool, and just has an overall widespread amount of knowledge on everything spells and witchcraft to overall spirituality and living from the heart with intention.
We get into so much cool stuff on this episode. For me, this was like kind of out there and different, but we talk about things like growing up with this ability to like see and be with spirits and other forms of energy and what that must be like. We talk about anxiety in our head or in our body. We talk about what it means to be a witch. We talk about spells, being intentional manifestation, which was really cool. We even talk about the roots of the word abracadabra, which kind of blew my mind. And we go into things, I want to say more human things, but how it relates to all this trauma, religion, fear, vulnerability. It was a really cool episode. We got really deep.
Yeah, it was excellent. And I also loved Rhian's definition of what a frequency shifter meant to her, which was a person or perspective or object, which is able to elevate a space through perspective shifts and modifying the default energy to a different resonance.
I love that. It's going to be interesting as we do this whole season to see like how each person defines. Right. We actually asked them to write it out. So they had to think about it a little, not just on the spot, give us their answer. So because this is a new season, we're doing things a little different. We're going to send you right into this episode. There's no more fluff, no more anything, but enjoy. And we're going to throw you right into it. So the first question I like have to ask you is, how does somebody become a witch? Like, that's just not right. Like, in when I was in junior high, nobody was like, hey, this is an option. Do you want to be a witch or a warlock? How does this happen?
How does it happen? Well, you probably were surrounded by witches in the junior high. That's when I had my first coven, actually. So it may be unbeknownst to you. But yeah, I always talk about this, how if I had wanted to create this as my career path, I would have had no ability to do so. Like, how does someone grow up to be a professional witch? And yet, for me, it happened by just radically following who I truly am inside, to be honest with you, letting my witch flag fly, I suppose. And there's that quote that's like, you let your inner light shine, all the other, it's like, if you let your weirdo light shine, all the other weirdos will find you. It's kind of a similar premise, right? I've always been really drawn to the spiritual world, and to psychic kind of paranormal things. And I am a multi-certified life coach. So most of my professional life started as inner self work. And when you do enough inner self work, you become yourself. And turns out when I became myself, I was a witch. So that's the kind of weird answer. And I just started talking about witchcraft and spirituality and psychic things. And turns out a lot of people out there resonate. Like, a lot of people have an inner witch too. And so I guess it kind of just created itself in a way. That's really how it came to be.
I love that. You just kind of settled into your own true nature and here you are.
Yeah.
I also consider myself a little bit of a witch, specifically more of like a cosmic witch or a green witch. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're getting into the types of witch and witchcraft, I'd love to hear from you though, too. Like, let's just like dive right in, to your experiences as a child. I read a little bit about this in your background and your bio, but you were kind of drawn to and had experiences with mediumship from an early age, right?
Yeah. I was always, seeing things that I guess weren't actually there. I would talk to my angels and my spirit guides. And when I was little, it just looked like they were just hanging out with me at night when I couldn't fall asleep, or just kind of external to me. And the way that when you're little, there's not really a difference between your imagination and reality. And I guess that that's on purpose. I think we really are seeing more than we're seeing, you know, it's at the time when we're little. And it wasn't really until I found out that wasn't everybody's experience that I started to be kind of self-conscious of the spiritual connection that I had. And I toned it down a little, or I learned how to maybe not say something that wasn't quite quote normal. But yeah, I was always knowing about people. I used to be able to do that thing. I can still do it, but this is very alarming actually. But I used to do that thing where you would just kind of approach someone in a grocery store and be like, your dead grandmom says like she's with you at Christmas, you know? And it's like, if someone's not ready for that, that's quite like,
it can be just shocking.
Yeah, they're in Trader Joe's and someone's just like, grandmom says, don't get those potatoes. Like, that's weird, you know? And so I don't ever cold read people or anything like that anymore, because it is alarming. But it's just a part of me. And it took me a long time to realize that that's not the norm. But once I did, I overcompensated and way toned it down. You know, like when you're little and you're just kind of singing to yourself and in your own little world, and then you realize people are looking at you, and you just like kind of dramatically with retreat into yourself. I kind of did that for a few years just to, I guess now retrospectively, I can see it was my way of observing myself and my own spirituality to figure out, how does this fit in the world in an acceptable way?
I want to like go deeper with this, because I think that a lot of people want to kind of like hear things or see things from that aren't in our like natural purview, let's say.
Yeah.
And I know for me, it was only recently that I started, you know, if I'd kind of asked for messages or signs, I would start seeing them. Now, they didn't show up. Like, I don't see, you know, beings in front of me, but I'll ask for something and it'll be so clear how it shows up in a song or like written somewhere, right? It's so obvious and I'm open to it. So it feels like very acceptable, but I could also see it being really scary.
Yeah.
Right. To have like things you see that other people aren't seeing. How did you, for people out there that either want to or are feeling and aren't as comfortable, how did you kind of get like comfortable with this and not be thinking that you're actually crazy or something that wouldn't have been serving, right? Like, it really serves you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've gone through periods of, you know, feeling other than, or I guess maybe crazy, but for the most part, I actually had a fairly like emotionally traumatic childhood. So for me, I used to say like, I can so remember what it felt like in the before times, like before I was born. Like, I could remember the feeling of like source or like infinite kind of the other side. And that felt more real and more comforting and more peaceful and more accepting to me than my actual tangible reality, that I was okay having access to it because it was the source of comfort. You know, it was the more, it was the reality I wanted more than the reality I was actually in. And, but it can be weird and alarming. And it actually also, you know, I teach, I have this thing called Witchcraft Academy, and I'm teaching them divine communication right now, which is exactly what you were just talking about, how to kind of tap into your guides and receive signs. And, the hard thing is everybody wants to have that connection. And the thing is, we're all already having it. It's not something you have to turn on. It's something you just have to allow to be true, or to break down your own barriers that you're saying within yourself that are like, well, maybe it's just a coincidence, or maybe it's not really real. And I want to be like, what if it is though? You know, because that's the real truth, is like, it's never that they're not with you. It's never that your guides or spirit isn't communicating with you. It's that you're in charge of how high that volume dial is turned up or down. And our default is to turn it down because we're told it's not real, or it's not acceptable, or we should doubt ourselves or doubt our connection. And all I do is teach people how to just turn it up a little bit because it's already there, you know?
And what would you tell people who are confused by or don't know how to tell the difference? If it's someone who's trying to tune into those messages or tune into their own intuition, gut feelings and instincts, but maybe they also struggle with anxiety, fear, and worry. This is a lot of people in the world, and they don't know how to tell the difference between something that's an anxious thought, fear, or worry, and a gut instinct, especially when it's telling them to do something maybe that they don't want to do, right? Like go in a direction that's maybe different than they desire. And then they're having this feeling and they're wondering, is this just fear or is this my gut?
Yeah. So typically if it's fear, it can't be solved with like reassurance or like a loving energy field. If it's fear, there's either way, listen, so if you're feeling being told like you have to do something and it creates anxiousness within you, anxiety really always just needs a plan, whether it comes from your intuition or whether it's coming from your thoughts. To calm anxiety needs a plan, because what anxiety doesn't respond well to is being told, well, that's not going to happen, because it's like, but what if it does, right? And so what we do in either case is give it a plan. If it does go badly, I'm going to do XYZ thing and then I'll be okay. And when you get to a point where you can envision a future where you're going to be okay, that's where you can distill like, all right, now, if I know I'm going to be okay, do I still feel compelled to do this thing? Because if so, that's your intuition. Right? If you can strip away the scary parts and you still feel compelled, then you're being called or drawn to something. And it's just a matter of trusting and figuring it out. But often your intuition is speaking to you from a specific place in your body. So it's helpful to figure out where you receive your intuition. And it's helpful to figure out like what it feels like. And generally, intuition is telling us, very quietly, it's nudging us in a certain direction, and it's a knowing, not a worry. Anxiety lives up in the brain a lot and it's fuzzy like a worry. Intuition's often kind of in your body and it's just a knowing. It might not be explained. So if you can trace it back to the origin story and it feels fuzzy, that might be anxiety. But if you're kind of like, I don't know where this comes from, I just know, that's generally your intuition talking.
Love that breakdown. I recently hired a new coach for myself, and it was like one of the biggest purchases. Always had a coach, but like this, I like went really big this time. Mm-hmm. And while I was on the phone with her, she's also describes herself as a witch, just but I was sweating and had chills. Like my body was cold and hot at the same time. I felt like I couldn't stop moving. My blood was racing. I was perspiring, right? Like I was just having like all these physical reactions. And there was a part of me, to your point, that was saying like, this could be interpreted as like fear, like I'm terrified. And the way, for whatever reason, I interpreted it was from inside, that it felt like my soul was trying to get my attention in any way possible. Like it was like rattling my cage, like, yeah, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this.
Yeah.
Like my soul wouldn't say you don't need to do that. It's just like, that wouldn't be like, I can do that on my own. Right. Like,
yeah. Your soul's not going to panic for you.
That's exactly.
Yep.
And so But you're, the way you just described it is so cool. Cause I'm like, oh, my brain was like, how do I pay for this? Right. My brain, but my body was like screaming, yes.
Yeah.
But in all these ways that someone else without having heard someone like you or any training would think these are all reasons not to, these are like signs to run away.
Right.
Yep. Which I love how you just put that. I want to ask you about kind of some, let's go like almost more into the like woo woo spiritual stuff.
Love it.
Are things like spells, is this like real? Can I like, you know, I bought a new house. Can we put it like a spell on it? Can we put a spell on people? And if so, like what spells do you, like, how does this work?
Hell yeah, it's real. You can definitely do that. Spells, okay. So a spell is just an intentional manifestation of energy. You're casting spells all the time. I'm casting a spell on you by doing my makeup and putting on jewelry. It's spells are our energy. Anytime we're intentionally shifting the energy, we're performing a spell in a way. And what's happened in our culture is we've been taught like it's bad to intentionally try to create outcomes that we want. Like, so like we simultaneously live in this culture that's like, you should have it all and be like this like famous wealthy genius, but don't do things on purpose because you should feel guilt about that. You know, it's like all these mixed messages that are weird. But if you know that you want to shift the energy of something, you're getting into the realm of spell casting in my vernacular. That's just my way of looking at it, right? And so, but a spell is so in a concentrated form of intentional energy that you have set in motion with a purpose. That's basically it, right? And the reason they work, there's a couple reasons why they work. Number one, I happen to think that this whole system we're in is like a computer program and it's just going to run on itself unless it's told to do otherwise. And so if that's the case, I'm going to learn how to upload my command inputs into the matrix of the computer program. And that's what a spell is. It's taking, for most spells work, operate on the premise of like a candle, just to be a base level. You don't need a candle. You don't need anything to cast a spell. But if we're going to take a traditional format, a candle, you're going to set it with an intention, usually by literally tangibly writing upon it. And then you're going to burn a candle and that, you know, creates the spell. The reason that works like that is because you're turning something tangible that exists in reality into energy. So if the energy around us is what's manifesting the tangible world that we're operating in, then I can reverse engineer that by taking the tangible world that I'm operating it in and turning it into energy. And that's like me going into like, now this is going to age me, but that's me going into like MS-DOS and like typing like run program, enter. You know what I mean? Like back in the day when we all had big computers on our desktops. That's what we're doing with a spell. And the reason they work pretty, I always teach my students, your spell is going to work. It's more likely to work than not because no one's out here telling the universe what it's going to go ahead and do. It's just running on its own momentum. But if you're going to sit there and say, all right, now do this, it's going to do it. So that's why it's important for you with spell casting and with any kind of anything you're putting intentional energy into to be really clear about what it is that you're actually trying to create, because they do have a tendency to work more than not work.
Go, Corinne, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
We're both excited. I mean, this is, for me, this is a lot newer, but like, I feel like we're both super excited.
Yeah,
it is. Listening to you.
I do spells in my house almost every day, and I'm just getting more and more comfortable talking about it. I didn't realize actually for a long time that I was doing spells all the time through using the power of intention and so many of the ancient like tools and techniques that I use. But now I'm like all in with like all the herbs and flowers and like the crystals and like the full set. I have like multiple sets of candles, and it's such a beautiful way to me of like interweaving intent, just intention in my life. And I had read about the word that the words abracadabra basically just mean I speak and so it is, or I create with my words, I create what I speak. And it's like, I believe all of this with like affirmations and the way I meditate and visualization. I was like, this is the same. It's just a different way. It's a different modality or a different method of doing the same thing that many other traditions and spiritual practices do, which is creating with intention and purpose based on our desires of our heart. And so I think that's a kind of cool way to look at it all. And, you know, I'm getting more and more into it. So it's fascinating to hear you talk about it. And I'd love to hear if you have like a favorite Do you have a favorite way to use magic? Do you have a favorite like spell or technique that you could share with us?
Yeah, I can. Let me try to think of something, but I just want to be like praise hands at you for everything you just said, because that was awesome. Super accurate. It's abracadabra just means because I said so. Literally, like that's just like, this is going to go like this because I said so. And it's like, well, why not? No one else is telling you what to do. So I absolutely love that. A favorite.
Right. And we certainly don't want the external controls of our politics, culture, environment to just be programming us in today's world, right? It's like, right, this is exactly a way for us to take control of our lives and ourselves.
Yeah. And you're articulating a point too, that is the biggest hurdle for most people with spell work and witch work and anchoring into their magic is that programming that's already happened to us. Because that programming has tried to keep us away from our own innate sense of magic, or keep us away from our own inner empowerment. And it said, like, you know, somebody else has that power, somebody else has that authority, or some figurehead can talk to God or the universe on your behalf. And that's disempowered us from knowing that we can just go ahead and do it our damn selves, you know? And so that's part of my platform, is like my whole entire platform, and you're gonna hear my dog, sorry, but my whole thing is about empowerment, like recentering you back into yourself and knowing that, what if you can, like, what if you are that magical creature? What if there's no difference between you and somebody else who seems to be magical? It's just that inner trust and that inner self work that you have to do to be willing to accept that that's a possibility, I think. But to answer your question about like what kind of spells, you know, when I'm teaching people who are just starting out, I really think that grounding and protecting is the most important thing. It's the most boring, but it's the most like necessary. People are really hesitant to ground themselves because I think they have a misconception of, if I'm grounded, I'm not going to be as connected. But the opposite is actually true. We're living in a body, and the body exists here in the world. That body has to hold the space for our spirit to connect. And so if the body's not really feeling tethered and anchored, then our connection can't be as strong. It's just like, it's like the antenna has to be like really connected to the TV, or I don't know, I'm losing myself in my own like inability to make this parallel, but it's just that you're groundedness, the more grounded you are, the more held down you are, and the more free you are to be open and expansive and to be an actual channel and to let that energy flow in and through you. So I always teach everybody to begin with grounding and protecting. And protecting is not to scare everybody, like not like everyone's out to get you or something like that. But a lot of times we're protecting ourselves from our own energy, or we're protecting ourselves from our own negative interpretation of events. Or if we have an area in our life that we don't have great boundaries and we're kind of letting people be harmful to us, and that's part of our self-work, protection spells help us with that because it makes us less likely to be okay engaging with behaviors that are harmful to us. Sometimes we're protecting ourselves from our own programming or from the impact of other people on us. It's not like necessarily scary demons. It's mostly like the annoying guy that lives next door that you don't have good boundaries with, you know?
I love that we just brought in like demons and protection. So I read recently this idea that, and I personally love this, that God, the universe, whatever you want to believe, really only sends us angels and gifts. Mm-hmm. And that even like the person that broke your heart that you think is the worst is actually a gift and an angel if you choose to view them as a lesson or something you can learn. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, demons or the evil things that we think are really just our own, like we're creating this stuff. It's actually not from the divine or from the universe or whatever you believe. I'm curious your take on what I just shared.
Yeah, it's like, it's nice to think about it like that. I don't know that I'm 100 on board with it, only sure, because from a practical level, just as a survivor of immense childhood trauma, I don't necessarily know that the people who did certain things to me are just angels in disguise, you know what I mean? Or, you know, for those of us who have had a lot of other kinds of trauma, I don't necessarily think that the universe gives us trauma as a form of lessons necessarily. Now, I do think that all things can have a lesson derived from them. We are capable as these really evolved, amazing creatures to to better ourselves from really intense situations, which is really incredible, actually. Like, we can take something awful and use our brains and rewire our neural pathways and like evolve and become better. But that's a testament to the individual who chooses to do it. And I don't necessarily think it means the innate experience itself comes from necessarily a good place. I also know that a lot of the premise of magic and spirituality is balance. And so for all of the positive, there really is a balancing force. Does that mean that it's negative and evil? I don't think so. I think it's balance. I think that we apply morality or an ethical code to a lot of things, but it's checks and balances. And from what I've done in my studies, because I'm an ordained interfaith minister, not just like from the internet, like I went to real divinity school for a period of 4 years. I've done a lot of study on this, and it's really about the harmony, the yin and the yang. And so there is duality in my experience, but does the bad have to have some kind of power over us? That's where I resonate more with what you're saying, which is, no, I'm in charge of what I do with whatever gets thrown my way. And I refuse to be made up of negative energy within myself. It might be an invitation or an option, but I'm gonna choose what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna transmute any negative energy that comes my way into something positive. And that's a conscious choice. And I think that's really empowering to do that.
Yeah. Corinne, can I ask her a follow-up? I don't wanna step over.
Go for it.
Because I think you just said something really, like, the things you've been through, right? The trauma and, like, right, I don't know, but I do know that we live in a world where a lot of people have been through a lot of things that I haven't, that I can't even not even comprehend. Yeah. I'm curious to, if we look at that for a second, do you think the bad experiences or the traumatic experience are quote unquote lessons, but do you think you'd be the person you are today without them, right? Not to say that they're good or you would choose them again, right? But right. That they are part of what created you to be this incredible being that you are now, that if we took those away, that maybe, who knows what you'd be, you know?
Yeah, well, you're bringing up a really interesting question, because I think you're right. Of course, we are a collection of our experiences, but we also deserve some credit in that for ourselves, right? Like, every one of my clients, I say, you know, you've gone through all this stuff. The common denominator was you. You got yourself through every hard thing you've ever been through. You were by your own side. You made the choice to rise above and to become who you are. And you get that credit for that, because you didn't have to do that, because a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people succumb to their experiences and let it define them. So it's an empowerment thing. But at the same time, you know, the duality of that is like, so I can celebrate myself and be like, yeah, I'm like this badass now, right? And that's good. And that's empowering. And it's true. The other thing that's true, though, and I've actually spent sessions with my therapist on this, is like, I don't know who I would have been if I wasn't traumatized to the point of being me. Do you know what I mean? And there's a world that's closed to me. Like Danielle Port had a meditation like 100 years ago that was like, go into this meditation and realize you've made certain choices that have closed doors to you. And go in and open one of them and see what your life could have been. And the weirdest thing, like, I'm not athletic. I'm not like, I mean, I'm a lesbian, but I don't play sports. So it's like this whole weird thing for me. But I was like, oh, I want to be a lacrosse player. And like, I played lacrosse for like 2 years in like high school, right? But in this meditation, I was like this like professional lacrosse player. And it was like not this thing that I ever would have done. But it illuminated for me that, yeah, a whole bunch of doors did close. Because I made a conscious choice, you know, I was actually probably one of the like, youngest life coaches in the nation, because I went to life coaching school in like 2004 when no one even knew what a life coach was. And I was like 19 years old because I didn't like the person that I was. I didn't like all the things that had happened to me. I didn't like the person I was raised to be. I didn't know how, and I didn't have the money to put myself through therapy. So I got my dad to agree to pay for life coaching school. And I taught myself how to be the person I wanted to be instead. Like, I reparented myself, but I had to do that because I hated everything about myself. I don't know who I would have been if I hadn't gone ahead and made my whole career around coaching and spirituality and self-work, because I felt that I had to do that in order to even be okay. So yeah, you're right. Like, it's like, it did shape me, and it did, I am this expert in like all this really weird stuff as a result. And it's cool and it is fun, but I'm also not a lacrosse player, right? And maybe I would have been a kick-ass lacrosse player. Who knows?
Yeah, it's so well said.
It's both.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. Now I forgot, though, Alex, what I was going to ask her, because I did have another question and direction I wanted to go that she had brought up. So, something about spirituality. So I was raised, even though I've like leaned into all of this in my current, you know, status in life, and as a self-proclaimed witch and a Reiki master and really into energy and frequency and using these tools with myself and my clients, I was raised really, really, really Christian. Still consider myself a Christian, but I did not resonate with a lot of the way I was raised. And there was something from when I was a small child that saw a lot of hypocrisy and sort of just resisted much of formal religion. And you know, the way it's presented a lot in the Western world. And then I was also simultaneously given a very negative perception of what witchcraft, witches, et cetera, are. And I'm often confronted with this as well. Like people think automatically, if you're talking about witchcraft and witches, like you're the devil, you worship Satan, like you're doing evil things with magic and you must have bad intentions. And like people are immediately kind of like, can get like a little bit like standoffish. And I hate that because I believe more that witches and those who were especially, you know, unfortunately their lives were taken in the name of what they were doing were our medicine women, women connected to the soul of the earth, to Mother Nature, to the ability to heal. And anyway, I just want your thoughts on all of that. I don't know how you were raised or what your religious background is, but how do you confront that? Or have you been confronted with that idea and that thought? And what's your response to people that like push it away because of some other form of religion that they have followed or?
Yeah, this is such a good question. This comes up all the time. And this is actually one of the hardest things for people who want to embrace their inner witch or to get more spiritual. Like they come into my Facebook group and they're like freaking out. Like, am I bad for even just being here and all that kind of thing? On my own podcast, I'm known for going on these tangents and they're often about like the history of witchcraft or the patriarchy or monotheism or things like that. So I do extensively talk about that. I've definitely been confronted with it before. Someone in my neighborhood drew a cross on my porch at one point. And I was like, I don't know what they're mad at me for. Is it because I'm gay? Is it because I'm a witch? Is it because I have political signs in my yard right now? Like, I couldn't tell which thing I was being like persecuted for. But it's definitely a real thing. I think that you bring up such a good point. Like, a lot of the war on witchcraft is really a war on women, just due to the patriarchal roots of like history in general. Because, you know, a lot of the witches that have been murdered over the course of history weren't even actually practicing witches. They weren't even actually doing anything except speaking their mind or having an argument with like their cranky male neighbor or like, you know, delivering a baby, you know what I mean? So it tends to be really, the history of witchcraft tends to be very politicized, unfortunately, and I'll twist it up in a bunch of other motives and they're just kind of masking behind this big scary word. And, you know, I once gave a talk about witchcraft and some lady in the audience was like, but you just seem so lovely. Why would you use such a terrible word about yourself? Right. And I was like, but that's why, because you hear that word and you don't think that someone can be lovely and have that word attached to them. Like, I'm purposely using the word witch because I want people to say, oh, that's what a witch can be. They can be nice and they can be focused on harmony and like plants. And like most witches are just sitting in their kitchen with their candles and their plants and petting a cat. And
I was going to say, don't forget the cat, girl. You cannot forget the cat.
I'll never forget the cat.
There's at least 1 to 10.
And so it's just a big, scary word. Now, I think that monotheism did it on purpose because, listen, I don't hate on Christianity. I just think that at the time they were trying to, they needed a system to control a bunch of people. They didn't have the internet. They didn't have phones. They couldn't be like, you know, tell everybody what to do. There was an element of having to control through fear and to make the certain things other than. And so they said, oh, do you want to talk to God? Well, you have to come to this building and this guy has to do it for you. And so in that capacity, they had to get everybody to the building because they had to tell everybody what they needed them to hear just to govern them. And so to get them to the building, they had to make them afraid to not be in the building, right? It's a government system. And so to keep them afraid from not being in the building, they had to be like, you can't talk to God yourself. That's bad. You're talking to demons. You're doing bad things. You should be afraid of that. You don't have that magic special power. Only this guy does. So if you want to talk to God, you have to come physically be here. Because at least they knew where everybody was at that point in the day, you know? But it took on a life of its own. And it got out of control, as most things that have a root in fear do. Fear has this insidious way of getting bigger and bigger and bigger and like creating more of itself. It's centripetal. It's just like love. Love is very abundant. It creates more of itself. So does fear. That's the opposite side of the coin. I don't believe the opposite of love is hate. I think it's fear. And so they both are infinite. They both create abundance from themselves. And it's just like, which thing do we want to anchor into? And I'm going to pick love every time. But a lot of people choose fear because it's fear, because they're scared not to. It's actually vulnerable and scary.
They don't know how.
Yeah.
It's something they don't know how to choose something different for themselves, exactly. Or think that they have the control or the power, because like you were just so beautifully saying, those controls and creation of certain constructs of religion put the power outside of ourselves.
Exactly. It externalized.
It stripped us of our own power and thinking or know, having that knowing that we can trust ourselves, that we can communicate that God is actually also within all of us.
Exactly. And that's my entire platform, is just like, what if you don't have to go anywhere else? What if it's just right back centered in you? But there's so much deprogramming that has to happen in order for that to even be a possibility in someone's mind. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing over here. Deprogramming.
I'm sitting over here, right, as like a straight white man, and thinking about the impact that this conversation has had on my life. Right? Like how I, through spirituality, it could be like almost like the levity or silliness of like being in crystal stores, right? Like I often walk in a crystal store and it's like, I don't look like the guy who normally walks in there. Or that's how I felt when I first went to yoga like 10 years ago. Like I didn't, 10 years ago, I didn't fit. Now it's different, but.
Right.
And so I can so see it for myself, as not only have I done right therapeutic work and coaching work, but like my spiritual transformation in, right. I never thought of it as witchcraft in any way, but it's right. Really energy work and intention has opened my heart up and my mind up so much more to love, and to go back like abracadabra, like I get to say how it goes. And the more I do it, the more real it becomes. Right. But to bridge this to where you two were just at, is we live in a world that is like, obviously it impacts everyone in different ways, right? The like white men specifically have sat on the top and had the power and the control. And it's really hard to get people to give that up, right? Even if there's a benefit, like for me to let go of that and surrender some of mine in different ways has actually benefited me more.
I know, right?
Than like trying to. Do you have any, I feel like you do because you've talked about it. How do we connect? How do we have more of, I want to say, people that are living in their heads and in their masculine, right? Whether they be men or white or whatever. Because to succeed in this world, a lot of people have adopted that, right? Those ways. How do we kind of crack that so there's more people that can step into this and embrace this and even peak without, right? Like all the fear that, or all, you know, the conditioning that they've had.
I think it's such a beautiful question. I'm like excited that you're asking the question, to be honest with you. I think it's awesome. My personal thoughts on that is vulnerability. I think it's important to make vulnerability safer in our culture. I think men have been, cis men in our culture have a disservice happening to them, because they've been told they're not allowed to be scared or have feelings or be vulnerable. And therefore they don't have practice in having conversations with themselves around those feelings, or perhaps many feelings, because they haven't been allowed access to the emotional realm that's been delegated just specifically to women. and or women presenting people. And the issue with that is that we all have feelings. We all have emotions. We all have fears and concerns and thoughts, but there's no pathway for people raised as male in our culture to be allowed to have access to that side of themselves. And when you strip access to it, the only thing that is left for them to do is to deny that it exists, and to make its existence wrong. Because if I am supposed to be a man and I am supposed to be in charge and I'm supposed to know everything, but there's a whole realm that I don't have access to, I'm not going to speak to it because I don't know about it. So I'm going to say, well, that's irrelevant and wrong, and kick it out and just focus on the things that I've been granted access to. But in so doing, we've denied so much of reality from having a role and having a seat at the table. We don't have room for emotions or spirituality, really, because those aren't traditionally male things. And so therefore, they haven't really been indulged as being worthy or having value. And men don't know how to interact with them, so they kick them out. And so to answer your question, I think that if we were to reinvite those things back to the table and to make it okay for men to be able to access them, then we have a real conversation happening. But in order for that to happen, vulnerability has to be okay first. Because vulnerability says, I don't know how to do something. Can somebody help me? And that is a sentence that toxic masculinity is terrified to say. Toxic masculinity does not know how to say, I don't know how to do something and I need help. And if we could introduce that sentence, I really think that everyone would benefit from being able to say I'm wrong personally. Like, I just think that's like such a liberating sentence that it would be great to be able to say it. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, no, to say, and even saying I want things or I need things.
Yeah.
I think in both worlds, especially men, but also even with women, I think we're is in our Western society and Western culture are often told to suck things up and, to kind of go with the status quo. So there's a lot of space for healing and vulnerability, but more and more people are open to it and asking those kinds of questions like Alex. And I can't tell you how many men I have come to my classes and sessions now and say things like, I want to learn how to be more compassionate. I want to talk nicer to my wife. I want to be a better listener. And things like that. And just even there is this space for that, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. And like, think about any time you've had an argument with someone who was just like not seeing your point of view and being mean. If they had ever softened and been like, I'm sorry, I don't know how to be nice in this moment, that would have changed the whole dynamic of the whole situation. That would have brought everybody's guard down. Suddenly you could say, well, all I need is this, and they could practice doing it. And the whole thing would shift dramatically. But I think that we've just been in this cultural like push to never say that it's just digging a hole and softening our edges and just saying, I don't know, or I need help is so empowering. But the trick about that is, again, it's duality, right? It feels very disempowering to say, I don't know. It feels so scary to say, I don't know how to do something and I need help. But it's actually the key to that empowerment by connecting to somebody else and learning how to be different in the world and accessing yourself in a different way.
Just imagined as you said that, like I just saw like humans, like we're just like playing tug of war and we're just pulling and pulling. At a certain point, we don't even know why we're pulling, just simply right. Because we don't want to let go.
Right.
But if one person was like, you know, this rope really hurts my hands.
Yeah, everyone would be like, thanks.
Like my hands are bleeding. It hurts. I'm tired. The other person most of the time would be like, yeah, me too.
Right.
You just like put this rope down. And then all of a sudden,
yes,
the tension's gone, right? The like pull is gone. The like being right is gone.
Yeah. And you're just standing there actually having a real conversation,
Yeah. As a man in this, I often will talk in my relationship where, you know, we never get to a place where we're not going to have tension. That's like part of life. And mm-hmm. when I'm in a tension filled moment with my partner, sometimes, and we're going back and forth and we can't get out of it, sometimes after I'll say, you know, what I noticed was like, you were in your head and I was in my head and our heads were just like banging together. Right. Mm-hmm. But then there's a certain point, because she's so filled with emotion and heart, that she'll drop into her heart and I'll get to see her feelings and her heart and her emotion, which all of a sudden pulls me out of my head because I don't want to see her sad and heartbroken and whatever. And after, it's like, hey, I don't necessarily have as much facility as you do with the feelings and the heart, right? I like working on it and I'm getting there, but you're able to drop into that faster than I am.
Yep.
And, but so if you can lead in this dynamic and drop into it faster, then I can also, right? Like you can help kind of train me. But to your point, right, I have to ask for that, right? Because we wouldn't even be able to have that conversation if I was saying like, oh, I recognize like I'm up here trying to be right. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I think what I try to work with men on is like, dude, it makes your life so much better. Like my relationship is so much easier. My friendships are so much easier. Work is so much easier. That like level of hardness goes away.
Yeah, 100%. And you're doing this beautiful, brave thing by being like, hey, can you show me how to do that? Or can you hold that space and let me follow you into it? I always say vulnerability is our greatest connector because we all relate to that feeling of vulnerability. And we can either go into shame about it or we can ask for support and let someone else guide us, which is what we all want to do. We all want to help each other. That's the funny part about it. We're all trying to like, I was just talking to my shadow work class about this. And I was like, you know, we all have the same secret. Every single person on this planet is carrying around a secret and it's the exact same secret, but we are all guarding it with our life. And that secret is that we're not perfect. And yet we all try so hard to prove that we're perfect that we won't ever just say like, oh my gosh, can you take the lead on this and show me how? And yet it's so liberating and freeing to not have to be perfect that it's such an actual blessing, you know? So it's like what you're having the conversation with your girlfriend is just beautiful because it's like, that's what partnership is in my eyes. Nice.
That is. Thank you, Alex, for giving us all a little buzz in our hearts. Oh my goodness. This is kind of a different direction, but I know we're running out of time here. So as a last question, I really wanted to ask you about any like cord cutting rituals. I saw somewhere you talking about it, and I use like shamanic cord cutting rituals with my clients and for myself, but I think they're really important. And you had talked before about like grounding, boundaries and protection being the first step, which I completely agree. I heard once somewhere that you have to be grounded first before you can ascend. And people are so obsessed with ascension, but grounding is actually the first, and rooting yourself to the ground so you don't just fly away is the first step to ascending, or that's how people actually get lost and confused and overwhelmed. So I know, I think cord cutting is one of those protection and also grounding, like coming back to yourself and your purity sort of techniques. So anything you have to add before we wrap up
there? Yeah, about cord cutting.
Yeah.
Cord cutting super trendy on TikTok right now. So my Facebook group is saturated with like cord cutting spells. I think cord cutting can be a really useful tool. I think it's one of those things that's two sides, right? Number one, you're constantly cord cutting. Like anytime that you insert a boundary into your life with a person, you've just cut a cord. It doesn't have to be candles with twine specifically tied around them or whatever. I teach a cord cutting class and I have it on my website, but you know, one of the things, examples that I gave them was I went outside and I got a stick and I wrote like one side of a situation on one end and one side of the situation on the other. And I just broke the stick. Cord is cut. It can be that simple. Spells are symbolic. Spells are representative of situations and circumstances. You can cut your cords. You can take your fingers and turn them into scissors and cut a situation from your life and push it away from you. And that's one of my favorite little throwaway things to teach people in the moment is like, if you catch someone's bad vibe, or if you're an empath and you've absorbed someone else's mood and you don't want to have it on you, cut it away from you and push it, and then let yourself feel different, because that's the other side of it. A lot of times we don't let ourselves let things work in our lives for some reason. But I do think cord cutting can be healing, but I also don't think it should be misused. I also think that cord cutting, if you're cutting a cord that's not ready to be cut, it's the quickest way to find out what your self-work is around that situation, because it's going to blow up a little bit in your face at that moment. So it's it's all complicated and requires, you know, the ability to receive the feedback from the action that you take, I think.
I like how simple you made it, though. The techniques that I use are from, like I said, shamanism, and also very simple, like using, imagining like a rope tied to your feet, for instance, or your feet in your hands, and imagining it representing something, and then using like an imaginary samurai sword and like cutting off the ropes or the cord. So it's more visual. You don't need any tools. Like you said, it's symbolic and more like any of these things about the intention to let go of that thing. But definitely heed those words of warning that you gave to only do it when you're ready. That's a good reminder.
Yeah. Most spells will illuminate your self work, as part of how they manifest. So that's why witch work and self work kind of go together for that reason.
Well, sadly we are out of time. This has been such an awesome conversation with you. Thank you again so much, Rianne, for being here with us today and sharing all of your witchy wisdom and knowledge about the spiritual world and how to deepen our connections with it. Before you go, though, can you just let everyone know where to find you, what you might have going on, or how they might connect after the show?
Yes, thank you. And thank you guys for having me. It was super awesome to speak to both of you. You guys are great. My website, I'm Moonstone Witchery on every platform, everywhere. So if you type in Moonstone Witchery, you'll find me. I have a podcast that's called Moonstone Witchery. I'm on Instagram, Moonstone_Witchery. And in Facebook, I have a really cool, fun, dynamic Facebook group, which is also called Moonstone Witchery. My little heart piece right now is my Witchcraft Academy that I'm teaching. So in Witchcraft Academy, it's called Moonstone Witchery Witchcraft Academy. It's on my website under courses, but it's my favorite thing. It's where I'm teaching. Really, I wanted a place to teach everything I know, quite honestly, because I'm not really here to market. I'm not really here to sell individual things. That's too annoying for me. Me and my ADHD just want one safe space to put everything. So I created Witchcraft Academy. And right now I'm teaching them divine communication. And we're going to learn spells and astrology and tarot cards and divination and mediumship and all the fun things. So you can find that on my website at moonstonewitchery.com.
Wonderful. Thank you again so much, Rianne. And those links will be down in the show notes below. So make sure you take a peek at those and go follow Rianne, check out her programs. And thank you again for being here and being a part of this episode of The Frequency Shifters.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Frequency Shifters. We really hope that you got some value, you learned something, and that there's something from this episode that you can take away and use in your life. Who are you thinking of right now that needs to hear this episode? Please share it with them. Share this on social media, subscribe and like and leave a comment. And please, if you have a comment or an idea or something that you want us to talk about or investigate, leave it online and we will go into those and bring you that information. Please like, share, and subscribe, and we will see you next time.